This is an interview with Yoneko Dosono, and this is tape 4, side 2. Go ahead, as you were saying, about the about your aunt sister who was divorced and in Tokyo?
No, in Okayama.
In Okayama.
Where my parents came from.
I see. But you were just saying something at the end of the other tape about taking, she thought that her husband would take her name?
That's my cousin.
Your cousin.
Of Gifu.
I see.
Chiyoko Hayashi. She married this intellect who was also a graduate of the Tokyo Imperial University. But actually, and so he would have taken her name, her
Why?
Surname. That's the way it is in Japan. There are quite a few families here who marry into a family, especially if it's only one girl in the family. Mm-hmm. They want to retain the name, and so the man marries into the family and takes her name.
I see.
You're not aware of that?
Well, I guess I had heard that, but I can't remember. I couldn't remember in what context and why that would have been the circumstances. But was it only under those circumstances, or would there be other circumstances which the man would take the woman's family name?
Well, usually, for instance, there is a family here. His name is Goro. So and so Goro, and you know that he's a fifth son. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Go is fifth, and so Goro. So just by his name, you can tell that he was probably the fifth son of the family.
I see.
So he marries into this Hayakawa family because she was the only daughter of a family. You either had wealth or you had beauty, or else they would say in the olden days, if you have 3 bushels of rice, you would not marry into the woman's family. It's sort of beneath you. But then it goes into the fact that when you have a lot of sons, and in the olden days it was the only eldest son who inherited the family fortune.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same as in England.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other sons would not be having money, so they would have to go out on their own. And so they would be have an arranged marriage to marry a woman of either wealth or family background or beauty. And so Chio-san was the only daughter with the other brother. And so they wanted to keep her into the family. And so this man married her and had her name. But they discovered that he was marrying her for her wealth and he didn't want to work. So when they lived in Tokyo, all he did was study and he didn't go to work. He was looking after her money. And so poor Chio-san, being married without ever having known a man, loved this fellow, but the family says, we're going to have you divorced, and so there's nothing else you can do. Well, this is 50, 60 years ago, and so children were not exposed to all the sex and all the things that you know now. I was completely bewildered when I got married. You know, I didn't even know what was going on. In fact, you felt like if you kissed a man, that's, you know, you're tainted. Mm. It goes back to my father going to Japan to see the background of my brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, so she was living there. After a few months, she came back into the family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of strife came, because when I went into the Hayashi family, I was supposedly the only child. And so it was actually my aunt and my uncle and the grandmother and me. And then there was a maid. But the divorced daughter came in. And so there was a little conflict between the stepdaughter and me. It was rather hard for my auntie, because blood is thicker than water, and because I came as completely a blank, she wanted to treat me like her daughter and to educate me, But the stepdaughter comes back.
Came back.
And she was 3 years older than I was. She was a very accomplished woman.
So did that create a competitive situation between the two of you?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because my aunt had to be very careful what she did. And one of the things that struck me when I first went there is san is honorable.
Yes.
And it was all Chiyo-san when she talked about her daughter, her stepdaughter. I was never san. And then there was a Kik-san who was a maid, and I hated her. She was a year older than I was, but I have a picture of her someplace. But she went in as a maid. She was probably 16 or 17, but she had a beautiful, she came from a farm family, but she came there to be educated, to learn the finer things of life. So she was under my aunt's care, but she spoke excellent Japanese, not the countrified. And here I come without not knowing the language. And I had to do everything that she did, because I was told that even if you're going to marry a rich man or a poor man, you always had to learn from the ground up. And so she and I used to have the same kind of duties, that we would have to polish all the halls and all the woodwork every morning and do things like that with her. And she always looked down on me. And whenever I went to classes or went to do any of my things that I had to go out, she always had to accompany me, because I was never allowed to go out in the street by myself. And so she always lorded over me because I couldn't speak the language, and I hated her. And I would ask my aunt, I said, how come they have a son put on their name and I don't? She would just call me Yoneko, and it would be Chiyo-san or Kik-san. Mm. He said, because you haven't earned it.
Boy.
Well, she was being kind to me, you know. Uh-huh. She was being kind to me. So I had to earn the respect. But that was sort of a tricky question, because Chiyo-san was somebody that they had hired, and she was going for training, and so she had to be kind to her. Uh-huh. Chiyo-san was her daughter-in-law. And here I come. But as I say, blood is thicker than water.
Right. So it was an awkward situation
there. It was good at times, but it was bad at times too, because there would be many conflicts in my aunt being very much more strict to me than she would have been to anybody else, and I resented that. And so Chiyo-san never talked back to her mother, and every time we went out, later years when we went out to study the tea ceremony, I only had two kimonos, so I never had to ask my aunt which kimono should I wear to go to the tea classes. But Chiyo-san had her dowry that was brought back to her, so she would always ask her mother, what should I wear? And she was always sort of fawning towards her mother. You uh-huh. understand the situation. Uh-huh. And so when I would ask, she would kind of disdainfully look at me, and you know, it's just, you know, what are you, that sort of thing. But she understood me after she had her own children. Mm. And she really understood me later.
Why was the, what made the difference? Why did she understand
later? Well, she raised her own children and realized that it was harder mm-hmm. for her stepmother to raise her, you know. Mm-hmm. And so she understood that. So when I went back to visit her, she praised me. Chiyo-san praised me, and she said, after I raised my children, she says, I often wonder how you could have learned everything that you did in the 3 years that you were here. Because, you know, in raising her own children, she realized that I really had to study, and I really had to persevere in the 3 years before I was married, that she had six children.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, going back to your trip coming over here, now you had mentioned that the ship that you were being booked on, what kind of ship was it again?
It was...
Was it a passenger ship?
Yes.
And I believe that you mentioned the name?
Hikawa.
Hikawa? Uh-huh. Maru?
Yes.
Okay.
I remember on board ship, Mr. Matsushima had... he had first class. He and his wife, and the rest of us were in, down below. And he had a huge bunch of bananas that I had never seen. You know, we bought bananas, but I never knew that they grew down this, no, this way. Is it upwards?
I think it's upwards.
Yeah, upwards, this way. But he had a huge, huge banana. It was like a tree.
Uh-huh.
And so every day we would go over to his stateroom and take a banana, and I had never seen it grown that way.
Huh.
But I remember that, and then we had a wonderful time on ship.
How much notice did you have between the time that you were told that you were going to be going and the time you actually left? How much time was there intervening?
Probably around New Year's that I had to prepare.
So how many days or weeks would that have been?
Well, probably a couple of months or so. A
couple months.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And because I arrived in Japan April 1st, April Fool's.
Huh. Did you... what were your preparations like for the journey? What did you take with you?
Do you call that a steamer? Steamership?
Steamership?
Uh-huh. Wardrobe?
Ah, board, yeah, right.
What do you call that?
Where you stand it up?
Yes, and then you open it this way, and then mm-hmm. has on this side you put your clothes, and on this side you have drawers.
Yes.
Yes, uh-huh. I still have it down the basement.
Really? Huh? So you have one of those.
Yeah, and then two suitcases.
And did you know, were there particular things you had to take with you going back to Japan that you wouldn't have to take with you if you were going to some other place?
No, I remember that I bought a coat with my hard-earned money with a fur on it. And then I made most of my clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I have a piece of the blouse that I made, but I'll show you that later.
Okay. Were there things that you couldn't take that you wanted to take with you?
Well, I remember my brother gave me a small box of a manicuring set, Q-Tex, mm-hmm. and that was, you know, we didn't have colored nail polish at that time, but we had a buffer and we had the plain white.
Yes.
That was taken away from me first thing.
Really?
Oh, yes. Wow. I had, well, Clark.
Sorry.
And I had sort of natural curl hair, and I had a Marcel iron, and that was taken away from me because the Japanese woman did not have curly hair. That was considered that I might have had mongrel blood in me because the Japanese had plain straight hair. And I was given as a going away gift some sterling silver bracelets, bangles. Mm-hmm. That was taken away from me. Oh, yes, very, very strict.
How did you feel when that happened?
Well, I resented it at first, but I understood because every place I went, the children of the village would follow me because I was probably one of the first that had Western clothes mm-hmm. and had heels on my shoes.
So you were allowed to wear those things?
No, because when I went over there, mm-hmm. My aunt said, you're drawing too much attention to yourself, mm-hmm. and that's a no-no. And so she had me wear Japanese clothes, which I was not used to. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that she said you could, we went to this Zori, the slippers,
Oh, yes.
We went to a special shop and she said, you can choose your own Zodi. And other than that, she chose everything for me. And I remember that I chose a black pair. And she said, no, no, black, you don't, girls don't wear black, it's for older women. And so I began to understand that color meant a lot to the Japanese. Mm-hmm. That in June, whether it was hot or cold or not, you started wearing summer clothes. Mm-hmm. If you wore a sweater, that was a no-no, not in June.
What did that mean?
Well, that you had to conform to all the different customs of Japan, that whether you liked it or not, everybody conformed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the children were all in uniform, you know.
Yes.
And the girls were certain colors, and the women were blacks and grays, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You wore your hair a certain way. You were not allowed to do this. I was considered what you would call a bird in a cage. Mm-hmm. You know, I could not make any friends. That all I went over there was to study, and that's what I went to do, which I loved, which was great. And because because of my age, I told you that I had to go to private schools, and the principal of the grade school knew a little English, and so every morning I would go there after school started, and I would go into his private office, and he would teach me Japanese. And that went on for a year. And in going to the school, it was a huge grade school, but there was a playground in the front, mm-hmm. and there was a fence, and there was a gate. And when you walked into the gate, right in front of you it was a building, and then there was the emperor's emblem there. And when you walk into the gate, you bowed to the emperor, then you walked in. Mm-hmm. And when I first went to school, my aunt took me there, and she told me I should do that. And I said, why? You know, this, why should I bow? You know, who am I bowing to? And she says, do as you're told. So most of the things that I learned was, it's not why you do as you're told.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very kind, very patient principal.
It must have been nice having somebody that was kind and patient to you after everything else that you were going through.
It was.
When you were coming over, did you had to have a health certificate, is that right, of some kind?
You mean for coming back?
No, for coming over, going over to Japan. You had to have a health certificate, is that right?
Not that I know of.
No? You didn't have to be inoculated for any...
No, not that I can remember.
And,
it was different. Coming over here, you had...
You had to.
Uh-huh. You had to have eye exam and I didn't, because I was a U.S. citizen.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But what about your citizenship papers? You know, you had an American passport.
Mm-hmm.
And were there other documents or papers that you needed to have to go to Japan?
No.
No.
No, mm-hmm. not at that time. It was a novelty for Niseis to go over there to study.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was written up in the papers frequently.
Hmm. Now,
and another interesting thing is, you asked me if I knew anything about politics before I went.
Yes.
When I went over there, everybody thought that I knew politics, and so they would ask me questions about, I have some papers too, about the dignitaries in America, and it just made me feel foolish because I was not aware of politics at all.
Mm-hmm.
And just before the war broke out, in fact, they were asking me about what I felt and everything, and I felt very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As you were getting onto the boat and getting ready to go, were you at all fearful about the journey? In terms of traveling such a long distance on boat and...
No, my father and brother and I... My father drove me to Seattle, and we stayed at one of the Japanese hotels, NP Hotel. And the next day we boarded ship, and I remember Reverend Yamaka was there to see people off. There were quite a few people from Seattle who were on the ship. And so it was a gay time.
And
you have to remember, Clark, that I was not very intelligent. I didn't know anything about the world history or anything, so I went there as sort of an adventure.
Exactly.
Knowing that I would come back in 2 years.
Yeah, you had no idea what you were going to be going through.
Right.
How was it when you finally said goodbye? I mean, your mother wasn't with you, just your father?
No, I had my brother.
Was it a tearful goodbye?
No. No, I remember my brother cried and said, how come Yonoka has to go to Japan? And I remember he said, has to go to Japan, as though I was told to go.
Uh-huh.
And so my father explained to him that he wanted one of the girls to go to Japan, and that was it.
Uh-huh.
You know, we did what we were told. We were, I don't think any of the Japanese nieces were rebellious.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were all obedient, did what we were told to do, and there was nothing like, we were not that Americanized that we would rebel. Or, in fact, I don't think any of my friends were that rebellious, you know, did bad things.
How large was the boat?
It was one of the largest NYK, that's Nippon Yusen Kaisha, so it's one of the, there was a fleet of ships. There was like Himaru or Hikaru was one of the biggest.
Uh-huh. And how would you describe the conditions that you were on the ship, the living conditions? Were they good?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
And do you have any idea how many passengers might have been on the ship?
No, because we, five fellows from Seattle,
mm-hmm.
and the two of us from Portland, and then the rest were the Iseis and other people. So we stayed closer to the people who spoke English,
mm-hmm.
and, when we went, there was a Hachiya Tsuneo, whose father had one of the big department stores in Osaka. And he had sent his son over here, and through Mr. Matsushima, he had come over as a goodwill ambassador, and he took a happy coat to Charlie Chaplin and to California.
Hmm.
And the son was younger than we were, and he was on the same ship.
Hmm.
And but we didn't pay any attention to him because he was Japanese,
right.
You know, that sort of thing.
Huh. What was the food like on the boat? Was it were you served Western food or Japanese food or both or?
I think it must have been both.
Uh-huh.
We just took things as they came, and the main thing is I remember the bananas.
and you said that the many days you would just walk around the boat with the gentleman that was accompanying you, Mr. Matsushima?
No, James Sakamoto, who
James
was the editor of the...
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. Right. And what kinds of things did you do on the trip other than that? I mean,
we played
shuffleboard.
Shuffleboard, and mostly we talked, and
were there any storms?
Oh yes, we had some stormy days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we were seasick.
Yeah. Were there any stops in between Seattle and Japan?
No, not that I can recall.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. But your health was pretty good during
the
journey? Looking back on that trip, it took 2 weeks, I think you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the most vivid memory that you have of that journey?
I remember we used to stand by the rail and look at the waves and philosophize. You know, I can't remember what we philosophized on, but most of the time I listened to what James Sakamoto had said, because he was a very learned person. And
mm-hmm. 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 So when you met your aunt then did the boat stop anywhere before Yokohama?
No.
You went directly into Yokohama. And what were you wearing then when you met your aunt? Do you recall?
I was wearing a hat and coat and a dress that I had made.
And looking back on that, do you think that that was an acceptable way to dress by your aunt's standards?
Oh, yes, because people in Yokohama wore American clothes.
Oh, they did?
Uh-huh.
It wasn't until after you got down to
Gifu.
To Gifu that it changed then.
Right.
And how long did that trip take to Gifu?
We were on the train for... I remember getting on early morning, and we got there late at night.
So a whole day.
Because we would go by train into Gifu City, and then from there we had to take another small train, local train, over to the town, and then we had to take a taxi from there over to where they lived.
Now, you were staying at your aunt's.
Mm-hmm.
Could you describe what the house looked like?
the outside of the house looked like an ordinary house like Kyoto. It was all wood. And it was brown, shiny wood. But it was right on the street. And you walk into that, and then on the side there's like a tough tatami room, and then from there's steps going upstairs to a room upstairs. But going into that hallway, there's another two rooms, and one had the Buddhist shrine where they have all the ancestors and that sort of thing. And then there was what we would call a family room. And then on this side, there was a maid's room, and then from the maid's room there was a small kitchen here, and this was all in the long hallway. And then in between there was a small garden here. And
like a courtyard?
Yes. And then on the side of the garden, on this side, there's another hallway that went into the guest part of the house, the formal part. And then from that side, on this side, I'll try to draw a picture of it, but there was what they call a warehouse. If you've ever been to Japan or seen pictures, it's white and it's a huge stone building, and that's where they put all their treasures in there. So it keeps the heat, and if there was a fire, it would not touch the things inside. It was built that strong. They called it Soko. Kura. My husband's name is Asazo Kura, but we'll get into that later.
Okay.
And then from this other part, there was another huge garden that had a lot of maple trees and plum trees. And then on this side, there was another small area where the grandmother lived. And there was a small stream that came on that side, and then they owned all this property here, and then back of that there was a big public bathhouse that sometimes we went to before the public went in. But there on this side we had, the kitchen, and then there was a bathroom, and then there was a toilet. And the toilet at that time was one of those where you have to take your clodhoppers off, get up to the toilet. And then in the olden days, the GIs used to call it honey buckets, but then the once a week, men would come over there and they would take all the
human
in buckets.
I see. So how large an area was this then?
Well, it was pretty big.
The house or the land?
The land. The rooms were all small, but they were, like, when you walked in, there was three rooms here, and then there would be the huge room upstairs where my room was. I had to climb the stairs up to here. And then we always ate in next to where the shrine was, over here, facing the garden. And then my uncle always ate over on that other side, and he slept over there. Mm-hmm. And then the grandmother slept on this side. She had a private two-room place. And Kiksan, the maid, had this room here.
Was there any furniture? So to speak? I mean, Western-type furniture, couches, chairs, or was everything on mats? And
It was all mats.
Tatami mats.
Later years, they fixed it so they...